Welcome to the Spa Girls podcast, the self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Wendy Vella.
And I'm Trudy J. And this week we have Kimbu York.
Hello. You.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
Yay. So we're going to talk about discovery writing with you, which is a really intriguing topic. And we haven't actually talked about it yet. We sort of realized in the spa.
No.
But first, I'm going to read out your bio, Kimbu, and then we will get right into it. So
sounds good.
Kimbu York is a Gen X elder goth whose main purpose is to provide a good life for her rescue mutt, Keely Boo, who is perfect and beyond reproach in every way. Aren't they all? Aren't they all perfect and beyond reproach?
Yeah.
Kimbu is also a librarian. I'm super excited about this, by the way. Former project manager and a professional author who wears too many hats and crosses too many genres, including romance, fantasy, and nonfiction. She's a bit grumpy, especially in the morning. And thankfully for us, it's our morning, but it's your afternoon, Kimbu, so we're okay.
That's right.
And look at that smile. She's happy.
I've had enough coffee at this point in the day, so I'm doing good.
We're going to be okay. Phew. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So, let's just get started by asking a little bit of your background. Like, tell us how you got into writing and self-publishing and you know, give us your origin story, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. Well, I'm one of the bog standards, you know. I was with a little girl who was going to be a writer and been writing stories pretty much all my life. I kind of gave up on the idea of being a professional author in the 90s because, you know, at that point I was in my 20s, going into my 30s. The industry was so different back then. It was all traditional. You had to get an agent. You had to get on the shelves at Barnes & Noble's or Borders, if anybody remembers those stores, at least here in the U.S. And so the stories that I wanted to write, I didn't think would sell and that I wouldn't be able to. I tried. I did a little bit of trying, but it was just like I knew it wasn't going to happen. Down the road, as times change, the starting point for me getting back into writing and writing professionally was surprisingly fan fiction. And I talk about this in a lot of different places. So some people already know this, some people don't. But when I was going through a really rough time in my life, I fell back into the fan fiction community, which I had not been in for many years. Like I was a very young fangirl and then I dropped out of fandom, got back into it about 2007, 2008. And that reignited my love of writing outside because I had been working as a journalist. I'd done some freelance work. I was in the IT industry. I was skipping around just like a typical Gen Xer, you know, loser, just going from job to job. I loved the writing. I loved the stories. And a couple of people who were in fandoms with me actually went and got published by a indie publishing company. So they said, we love your work. Write something original and submit it. And I was like, sure, why not? Like, throw it out the window, see what sticks. And it did. They actually accepted my stories. I had several books published by them. We eventually had to go our separate ways. I got the rights back to my stories at that time and the novels. And I decided to try self-publishing them. Now, I had done a little bit of self-publishing previously with my memoir, Grieving Futures, Surviving the Deaths of My Parents, which is as depressing as it sounds. I figured I would self-publish that because who else would want to read it anyway? I just wanted it out there, mostly for friends and family. But that experience led me to realize that I could do it with my own books. So fast forward 2016, 2018, I'm self-publishing my backlog, and I'm really getting back into the love of writing and the love of telling my own stories. And these days, I've gone a little bit into, not a little bit, I've gone whole hog into subscription-based. I'm on Ream. I've got my own blog that people can subscribe to. So things have changed a lot, but it's still me enjoying telling the stories that I want to tell, which is all I've ever wanted to do since I was writing Jack London fan fiction when I was seven. Like, it's sad. Y'all, so sad. It was tragic.
Stop it.
Really, truly terrible. And then straight into Star Wars and Star Trek. Like, the love is still there. And so that's where I come from with my writing. And I just want to keep telling the stories.
A great story.
It's kind of cool. There's lots of different authors that we've had on that talk about starting out in fan fiction. It's a kind of interesting. Yeah. We want to extend our favorite worlds.
Yeah. Mm. And there's so much I could say there. I don't want to derail it, but I will say what's different now is that a lot of more authors feel comfortable saying that they started out. Like you're going back 10, 20 years, there were still a lot of authors who got started writing fan fiction. They were just scrubbing the serial numbers off. They were doing it under pseudonyms. They were never admitting it in public. And these days we're much more comfortable saying, yeah, man, I love fan fiction. You ain't taking that away from me.
Yeah. It's true. It's such an improvement.
So yeah. Awesome. Changed so much. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, can I just say before we go on any further how cool your website name is? I want that website name.
She's been raving about it this morning.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I do it. It's all DIY. I do all my own websites and all my own graphics and everything.
I'm so jealous every time somebody says something like that.
Yeah, I'm just
about websites. I'm like,
y'all, I've been doing websites since 1996. So, you know, it's
it'd be handy to have around.
You know, sometimes I wish I didn't because it's a lot of work. I'm not going to lie about that, but I've been doing it for a while. Yeah. Thank you, though. Nice Thank work. You so much, Wendy. I appreciate it.
No worries.
So back on track now, people. Actually, I'm going to take us off track again because I want to quickly talk. So you've got you're a librarian. So I love this idea. So does that help your writing at all? Like how did that? Yeah, tell us.
So the reason I'm a librarian and. If you have any librarians who are listening to this podcast will get the joke. But the reason I'm a librarian is because I love books. Now, the reason that that's a joke is because library science, library studies isn't really about books. It's all about information and data. It's about information literacy and ebooks. And so, but I just love books. And so when I went in to become a librarian, the reason I did was I actually wanted to work in archives and rare book collections. And that's the focus of my library school studies was the history, what is called the history of text technology, or more commonly known as the history of the book. And so that really does inform a lot of my writing because I love how the technology affects culture. And you don't get certain cultures because they don't have certain technologies. And some cultures develop in certain ways because they have certain technologies. And I'm being very vague because there's just so much there that I could go into and I could, again, derail the conversation. So does it affect my writing? Absolutely. And in fact, sometimes a little bit more directly than others, like the most recent serial that I've started, Dragon's Grail, is about a middle-aged, it's a fantasy novel. It's very much a fantasy, second world fantasy novel. And it's about a middle-aged librarian of like a monastic library and how she gets tossed out into the world of magic and dragons. And so, you know, using some of my own experiences to play into her experience. So that's the direct connection. Yeah. But I just love the history of books. I love how books are made. I love how books are used. I love how the technology is changing on what is a book. And so, so it just affects everything that I do, really.
That's fascinating. I'd never thought about it like that. In my head, librarian means that you just get to hang out with books all day and not that it's about the data and the information and the organization of it, I suppose, too, right? Like where on the shelf should this book go rather than, I love this book.
You want to talk about taxonomy, which is what that is, then we can do that. No, you can do that right now.
I just did want to clarify that the connection between you and the woman that you've written about in your book has nothing to do with you personally having a dragon.
I really can't answer that right now at this time. So
I'm just wondering what's behind the screen. That's all. Just asking for a friend.
Don't look. There's nothing behind the screen.
Nothing to see here.
Okay, quick. We better get back on before we give away the actual
Are we
secret.
On track? We'll never get on track. All right.
No. So the topic for today is discovery writing. Now, among us, we have Wendy, who is a pantser. So she is listening with all ears on this one.
She is sort of both.
She's a half and halfer. I'm an all over the shower. Probably more of a plotter than a pantser. Okay, so but let's start in the beginning. What is discovery writing? Tell us exactly what it is.
Discovery writing is writing from a place of curiosity without guardrails. So you're going into the story, answer a question. Who is the character? Where are they going? What have they experienced? You may have an inkling. You may have an idea of what the character is or the setting. A lot of discovery writers or pantsers I know start with a scene in their head and then they have to build up from there. And so they are doing so without, and I hate using the word restrictions because there's, as I'll get into it, I'll talk, there's nothing wrong with outlining either. But in their mind, it would be a restriction. It would be a constriction to use something like an outline or a summary. They want to follow the story where their intuition and their instincts take them. And that is what discovery writing is all about.
That just sounds scary. I'm getting the scary jibbies. Which,
when you sounds pretty that. Normal to me.
Yeah, it seems to a lot. Yeah, whatever. Every day.
Every day's a wonder. I have no idea what's coming out.
No, right?
Things can change while you're in the shower.
You can. Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, that. Yeah.
That's exactly where that needs to go.
So is it always about the character, or is it, could it be there's a situation like, or a conflict that they start with, like, or does it, is the character the better place to start, do you think?
And my answer to that is depends on the writer. So the basic construct in what I explain in my book, By the Seat of Your Pants, is that discovery writing is a technique, and it's a technique in the same way that outlining is a technique. So there's no one right way to outline, is just as there's no one correct story beat system. Like, you've got the hero's journey and save the cat and the three-act structure. Those are all outlines. Those are all story beats. It doesn't matter which one you use. They fall under that umbrella. And so with discovery writing, it is a technique. And so there are lots of different ways to use that technique. And so for me, personally, I usually start with a scenario with a character in it. And I focus on that character. And then I build the scenario out and figure out, why is this character, you know, in the quicksand next to the train track? I don't know, but I got to figure it out. I'm curious. And that's what drives me. Some people who use discovery writing have a theme or an arc that they want to tell. My friend Gina Hogan Edwards, she's writing historical fiction, and she has a young girl as the one of the main characters in her story. And she kind of had a scene that was like the end of the book, but it culminated in the story arc. And so she's had to work backwards to figure out how the girl got there. And so oftentimes it does involve the character, but I don't think it always does. And I think a lot depends on the specific discovery writing technique that the author is using and their own personal preferences and inclinations. Some of us just lean heavily into dialogue, for instance. Others lean heavily into descriptions. Mm-hmm. And that can also affect how you use discovery writing as a technique.
Mm-hmm. What occurs to me is that in this situation, a beginner writer might go, okay, I've got this person standing on the side of the road with nothing around them. Whereas you talked about, why is this character in the quicksand by the train tracks? And so as a more experienced writer, you're putting this character into a situation that's kind of dramatic, has a time limit, you know, like they've got to get out of the situation before they get sucked down into the quicksand, you know, all of these things. So can you talk a bit about that? Like when you're beginning with this character, do you have to have a conflict there, or is it a situation, or is it a something, or
how usually do you... it's a situation. I think what you're talking about is actually, so discovery writing is a technique I found tends to happen with very new writers, very inexperienced writers, because they have an idea, they're grabbed by something. And so they're going to jump in, they're going to write the story, and they have no clue what they're doing. And, you know, because they've either never written a novel before, or they've only just dabbled with writing before. And then there's discovery writers, you know, like Wendy and Cheryl and myself, who spent years studying our craft, reading other people's novels, reading books, reading craft books. And we have a very strong intuition about what should happen. Mm-hmm. And discovery writing technique, as a technique, works best for people who are really have a strong intuition for storytelling. Mm-hmm. That might come naturally, but it might not. So to circle back around to your question, if a newbie writer is coming into this and they just have a character they really like and they're setting them in the middle of a scene, but they don't know what to do with that character, then they're probably just going to write a lot of info dumping. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be a good story, right? It's still discovery writing, but they don't have the skill set yet. So in that situation, sometimes the answer is, you know, back up, pull out, write an outline, do some character analysis sheets the old-fashioned way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is just to keep writing all the way through until you get something where you can actually start working with it. Very rarely do I find with discovery writers, do they come into it with just kind of a blank slate? Like, I just want to write about, you know, this kid. Usually there's some kind of impetus, like you said, like a conflict or a dangerous situation or a relationship going sour, or, you know, if it's a more literary work, you know, the person's thinking about self-harm or something like that, which would kick the story off for a discovery writer. Mm. But again, it really does boil down to how much intuition, how much you've honed your intuition, how much you've honed your craft, and where you're coming from as a writer that can really affect how successful the discovery writing is going to be for you.
Yeah. How do you hone your intuition?
So Becca Sim talks about this a lot. And I think when I read her book, Dear Writer, Are You Intuitive? That really helped me figure out why discovery writing could work. So the way that you hone your intuition is do a lot of studying. Like, so you've got to read other novels. You've got to watch good movies. You've got to watch good storytelling, good plays, because what you're doing is you're interiorizing your familiarity with how to tell a good story. Mm-hmm. And studying craft books, absolutely critical. That will help you a lot. But experiencing the stories and noticing the things that you're feeling as you read the stories consciously with purpose, rather than I'm reading a book for fun. It's like, I'm reading this book because I want to know how they did that. And like, for instance, I'll give an example. Last year, I read Victoria Goddard's Hands of the Emperor. And my first read through on that book was just like, this is amazing. What is going on here? And then I was like, how did she do that? How? So I had to go back and actually, I didn't create outlines or anything, but as I read the book, I was like, oh, this is an emotional peak. Oh, this is a cliffhanger. Here's where she brought in this character. Here's where she brought in that. And all of that hones your intuition. It's just like playing a sport. If you play a sport long enough, you will know what the ball is doing when it's coming towards you, because you've seen it so often that your instinct is telling you, oh, it's going to curve to the left, just because you're watching the trajectory, you know how it's been thrown. You can't really explain why unless, you know, you sit down with a replay. But that's kind of how you have to work with intuition. It's not just something you can learn in a textbook. It's very experiential.
Yeah. And I think as authors, we read books differently now, like at least I do. And I'm sure you guys do definitely. Too. Mm-hmm. Like you read a book and you kind of, I'm sitting there going, wow, that was so well done. I liked how they did that, and that. I found that a little bit with the beginning of Fourth Wing, where I came in I was just so appreciative for how some of the setup for the beginning of that book. Like, I just was like, she's doing this so well. I'm drawn in already, and I could feel it. But I was also kind of like, there was this little voice at the back of my mind going, appreciating it as an author as well, like what she was doing. So I can
see exactly she was really clever. About getting the backstory out when with the way she was talking and stuff. She was very smart.
I love that book. Anyway,
Very good.
Okay, so that's cool. So if someone is starting out and they want to try discovery writing, probably they've got an idea, is what you're saying. Hopefully. Let's talk about, assume they have. So where do they start? Like, and it's kind of in a no rule situation, right? Like, you're talking about whatever works best for you. So for me, I start at the beginning, but that's not even, you don't even have to start at the beginning, right?
No. So when I say discovery writing is a technique, and there are different techniques that you can use, for instance, start at the beginning and write all the way through. Dean Wesley Smith, who is a discovery writer, a pantser himself, uses that and promotes that method. He's like, just sit down, write, start at the beginning, write all the way through. That works really well for him because he's been writing for close to 50 years. He's got some pretty good intuition going there. Yeah. It can be a disaster for people who do not have that kind of experience, but it is a good place if you do have the beginning in mind. In my book, I talk about the different ways to be a discovery writer, and I give exercises about things you can do to build up your discovery writing skill set. So, for instance, one of them is, so I before I go into it, I think I need to really explain the difference between free association writing and discovery writing, because a lot of critics of discovery writing say it's just free association writing, and it's not. Free association writing is genuinely no expectations, no plans, no any kind of structure in mind, no thoughts. It's trying to connect with your innermost subconscious, and it's a very powerful tool. I do, for especially for journaling, it's great. Discovery writing always has a purpose. It has a story that's going to be told. It has a character that wants to be told, talked about, that the author wants to explain, a character arc that the author wants the character to go through. It's not completely without any rules or any map whatsoever. There's usually a good idea what you want to do. So, for instance, one of the exercises I have is basically to think of a story prompt, or if a character you already know of or a scenario you already have in mind, and very simply build up your skill set. You write for 5 to 10 minutes with absolutely no outline. The next time you sit down, which could be later that day, could be the next day, could be the next week, you write for 15 to 20 minutes. But here's the trick. You read over what you wrote, you don't edit it, and you start writing immediately the next scene. You're not allowed to plan anything out. You're not allowed. You're just reading what you wrote, and then you write the next thing. And you do that multiple times until you're writing at least 30 minutes to 45 minutes of just discovery writing, which is just you read what you wrote, and then you write the next scene. This help builds up the skill set, because what that's going to show you, and this is the important part, what that this an exercise like that is going to show you is that where your weaknesses are. Are you stumbling into info dumps and backstory dumps? Are you getting lost in the witty banter and never moving the plot forward? Like, you will be able to see if you're doing something like that purposefully, where you need to brush up on your own skills as a writer to incorporate that in your discovery writing. And because you're doing it in measured chunks, you're not going to be carried away and fall down the rabbit hole that you might otherwise if it was just completely untimed. Mm-hmm. So there's other exercises in the book. That's a good one, I think, for people to start with. Mm-hmm. I have some other exercises that are more prompt focused, that are a little bit trickier. Like you write to a prompt, and then you write a paragraph, but then you pick a completely different prompt, and that has to be the next paragraph. And oh, so, that's a good one, because it really just, it's out of the blue. You've got to think of how to solve this problem. I think a lot of discovery writing is actually going in and driven by curiosity, you're problem solving. how did they get down the well, and how are they going to get out? That's a good question. I don't know. They're going to call the dragon? What are they going to do? So I don't know. It's a writer. I don't know. I have one of my Dragon's Girl arc series is the Pirate's Witch. Now, I know the title, and I know it's going to be on a river, but I don't know who the pirate witch is. I don't know if she's good or she's bad. I don't know any of that. But I know that that's something that's going to be important in that particular story arc. Yeah. So that's the fun part for me.
Wow. Yeah. And I think that's a difference between the plotting and the pantsing, is a plotter would be horrified and terrified, and a pantser is excited and kind of finds it challenging, right, but in an exciting way. But it kind of adds to it rather than.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's every just brain different is different. People. Yeah, it's just different people to have different brains where it's not like, right. I mean, it's wrong.
I think all of us would love to be plotters.
I'll be honest.
Yeah, like, I feel like I have tried, should save time, but yeah.
So I've tried so everything. Hard to be. Mm-hmm. I've tried everything.
I plotted one day with Trudy a whole book, and I never wrote that book because I just didn't want to.
Bingo.
Yeah. But before I start a book, I know exactly where I'm going and it's all in my head. But yeah, I'd love to be that person. How cool. Just sit down and go, chapter one, chapter two.
I'm in a Pantsers Anonymous meeting right now and you guys are like, I thought we were talking about
how... My name is Kimbu.
Yeah. We're talking here about how awesome discovery writing is and how That's much brilliant. We want to Man. Continue using it. One thing I do know about Wendy, for example, is that she will write like... you know, 30,000, 40,000 words in, and then she'll kind of go back to the beginning and start again and kind of edit and read. And then she will cull, just casually cull 30K words out of her. Out of
and her. Cheryl does that too, but she has a folder that she puts her culled words into.
Yeah.
She can't.
Never to be seen again.
She can't quite let go of them. I'll just go, no.
Delete. Delete them, Wendy. Oh, no.
Absolutely gone. Geez. Gone into the ether.
That is not uncommon. My rule of thumb is I usually don't know who my characters are until I'm about 30,000 words in.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the chapters or one of the sections in my book, it's called, you know, the darlings that you kill or kill your darlings. Because if you're going to be a discovery writer, if you're going to practice discovery writing techniques, yes, you're going to have to get used to throwing out words and just like 30,000 words. Man, I've thrown out 50,000 words. Like just like
whole chapters. I've just gone whole chapters. Gone.
That's a book for me.
Yeah, you know, just no, I can't do that. So I do save it though, like Cheryl. I'm like, oh, well, maybe I could repurpose it somehow. And I never do, but I save it.
No, I'm really character driven. So I have to have all the names are what take me the longest, to be honest. I can spend 2 weeks looking for a name.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Right. I'm trying to name a character right now and I've got his first name and I'm like, just, this must be the 17th last name I've given him. My surname I've given him.
Thank goodness for find and replace.
Yes.
Even though it can muck up a lot of things.
Oh my daughter's just thinking about writing a book and my son was as well. And they're like, oh, how do we do it, Mum? And I'm just like, wow, really? I had no idea.
just sit down and it comes out.
And then you work out what's good and what's bad.
But they will both be plotters.
Yeah.
I guarantee you.
Yeah, yeah. Your daughter will be a plotter, 100%.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. Mm. She's a project manager. Although, actually, that was the question we had. Cheryl, yes. Do you want to ask?
Oh, sure. So earlier we were talking to Kimbu about the fact that in her previous lives, she was a project manager over various careers. And I just wonder how that can possibly sit alongside the fact of discovery writing, because they just seem so polar opposite.
Because two things that discovery writing and project management can have in common, I don't think this is going to be true for everybody, obviously, but for me it is. It's that you're putting things to organizational buckets. Now, in project management, you put things into organizational buckets and then you break them down and assign them tasks and put them on a calendar and have due dates and deadlines. But the very basic principle of project management is super simple. It's just 5 steps and you just put these things into these general buckets and then you go from there. For me, as a discovery writer, and this a lot of people find this very ironic, I lean heavily into story beats systems. There's a difference between outlining and using story beats. Outlining says specifically what's going to happen in the next scene. A story beat will just be inciting event. And like, I don't know what the inciting event's going to be. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't exactly know who's going to be involved, but I know that I need to have the inciting event in the next thing. And so for me, it's actually very easily to move back and forth between those two worlds, because to me, it's about the organizational buckets and how things are put together. And I just have a very, very structural mind. My other book previous to this was Become an Unstoppable Storyteller. And it was based on a spreadsheet I did of story beats for long-running serials. And man, I love doing a good spreadsheet. I just really do. Like, yeah. I don't know why. But if you sat me down and tried to say, okay, well, here's how your story, here's what chapter one is going to be, here's what chapter two is going to be, I'd just be like, eh, can't do that. Sorry. I've got to feel my way through this story. So I don't think they're as unalike as for me, as I use discovery writing, as a lot of people think. But also I think a lot of people have the image of project management as, you know, very, very strict deadlines, Gantt charts. And yes, that's a side of project management. Absolutely. That's important and factors in a lot of project managing, but at heart, it's just more about the simple structure of having everything in its place. So that's my answer to that one.
Can we ask perhaps what the five buckets are?
Sure. So the first bucket is ideation. It's having an idea of what you want to do. And usually at this point, it's visioning what the end goal will look like a lot of times. Two is planning. At the planning stage, you're creating a budget, you're figuring out the timeline, you're just figuring out what needs to happen. The third stage is the ongoing doing the project. It is the doing of the thing. It is the building of the building. It is making the software. It is whatever you're doing, right? And usually that's the longest running stage because that takes the most time. The fourth stage is ending the project. And the fifth stage is analysis or after action reporting, is figuring out what you did work, what didn't work, what you're going to have to change if you're going to do it again. Those are the buckets. Some project management systems have four buckets. Some have slightly different labels for the five buckets, but essentially those are it. It's, you know, ideation, planning, instigation, resolution, and analysis. That's it. That's project management. You are now all qualified project managers. Congratulations.
Awesome. If I need a second career, I'm there.
Yeah.
There you go. You're ready to roll.
Yeah. Can't hear you, Judy.
I muted myself because there was a siren going off. As authors, we are project managers anyway. Like, we are managing ourselves through it. What I find fascinating about the five is that ending a project is one of the buckets. Like, it sort of feels like sometimes, like, it's to me, it's like, oh, I can't quite bring myself to end stuff. And so that makes a lot of sense to me that there's a bucket for it to kind of remind you to actually finish.
You do often say, I can't get this book to end.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny considering you're a plotter in the group.
I just, I struggle with endings. Like, I literally just finished edits on a book this morning and I'm like, have I ended it in the right place? I don't know. I'm not sure.
But then we're second guesses. Writers are second guesses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
if you read it long enough, you just get tired of it, don't you?
So my solution to that was to slide into writing long-running serials. So I don't really plan on ever ending my stories. It's super convenient.
That makes sense. There you go, Trudels. That would work for you. Yeah. Long-running serials do. Perfect.
Awesome. Yeah. Then I have to remember all the things. No.
Yeah, you do.
I have two questions. First one is about your – it's intriguing to me because there's the dichotomy around discovery writing, but also you do have a structure in there. Like, you it is – and maybe for some people it's completely free-flowing, but what you're talking about for your particular brand of discovery writing is that you are doing it within a kind of structure, in that you know that there needs to be an inciting incident. You know that maybe you get to halfway point and there needs to be something happening there, or that there needs, I don't know, if you have the black moment where everything goes wrong and disaster strikes, or the, you know, like all those kinds of things that are a part of plotting. Is that something, do you think about it that consciously, or is it just something that almost subconsciously happens because your intuition knows how to put together a good story?
It's on the front end, it's intuition. I do not sit down with the plot with a beat structure and say, oh, I'm going to use Save the Cat and I'm going to do this and these are going to be my, you know, 47 steps. I don't do that. I sit down, I start writing the story, I get into the story, I learn who the characters are. Usually by the 30,000 word mark, I have a much better grasp of who the characters are and what the theme is and where it's going. then I will keep writing it. Usually when I get about two-thirds of the way in, now this is for a novel, not a long-running serial, but for a novel, get two-thirds of the way in, that's when I'll sit back and actually put on the, you know, the Beats lenses of my glasses and look at, am I filling the beats? Am I fulfilling the reader promise? You know, are the beats consistent? Did something happen too early? Is something happening too late? At that point, I might start shuffling things around. So it's a little bit of both. And again, like many writers do discovery differently. One method of being a discovery writer is what I call the puzzle master. There's someone who will write out of order and they'll create all these little plot points. And then they'll write between them. They'll fill in between them. And sometimes they never use a beat structure or an outline, or, you know, they never go back and do a reverse outline or anything like that, because they've spent so much time building those bridges between those plot points that they're very confident and they about what they've created. So it really just depends on your technique. For me, the beats are a way for me to fine tune the story. And I think I've internalized it because I have studied, you know, I really have been studying literature and writing since I was a little girl. So I admit I have a little bit of a jump start on a lot of people, but I think anybody can learn that. Like that's too late for you. No, that's not what I'm saying. But for me, it is very internalized because of that. Other people might need to approach it a little differently. But I guess the message that I really, 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 the reason I wrote the book, y'all, it's because I want people to understand that how they approach writing is acceptable. It's fine. Are you using an outline? That's great. Can you not use an outline? Like when I'm like Wendy, if I use an outline, my brain is convinced that I wrote the story and it loses complete. I can't do it. I've tried. Like I write the outline. It's a great outline. I need to sell it because I'm never going to write that. It's like there's nothing for me to do with that anymore. Right. But it doesn't matter if you are writing a good story and you are fulfilling the reader promise and you are finding joy in the process. There's no real wrong way to do it if you're hitting those marks. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really want people to come away with from my book. It's just understanding the way you're doing it. Yeah, it's a lot of people make fun of pantsers and certainly, you know, established authors, established writing teachers will put their nose up at you and say you're doing it all wrong. But you're not if what you're doing is creating the product, the story, the book, the novel, the serial that you want to tell. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty passionate about that, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And I mean, you're even more vindicated when your books sell, because clearly exactly. What you're doing is appealing.
Right. Right. And, you know, people love the story, and, you know, every story could be better. Like, it's just like, that's just the nature of the business. You can always go back and rewrite it and polish it. But if your readers are loving it, and you're loving the act of writing it, and people are buying it, and it's the circle is completed, then heck, you're doing it great. You're doing great. You're doing it right. No problems.
Perfect. Even if no one's buying it, I guess, as long as you're creating stories that you are loving, do you know what I mean? Like, as long as you, that's...
I learned that in fan fiction, because there are definitely fandoms that are super tiny, small. Some that, you know, I've never heard of, and you'll go in there and there'll be only 30 stories written in that fandom, which for regular fandoms is an incredibly small number of stories. But you know what? Those 30 stories were written with love, and they were written by somebody who loves the property and loves those characters. That's enough. That's enough. And if it's your original stories and three people read it, three people buy your book, but you've made those three people happy. Then okay, you've done it. Success. Good for you.
That's awesome.
100%.
100%. Okay. So I had another question. Oh yeah. So what if we get stuck? This is my question. So you get to like halfway and you're like, oh no, I'm lost. What do I do? Help me. Help me, Kimbu. Help me.
Well, there's several things to do when you get lost or you get stuck or you write yourself into a corner, which is most pantsers talk about it that way. I mean, you know, like I was talking earlier, they're at the bottom of the well. The dragon left town. Nobody, there's no rope. There's no way out. We're just stuck in this. there's several different things, and it all depends on what the real problem is. So if you're stuck in a situation where you've written yourself into a corner or found your characters at the bottom of a well, whatever it is, step back a little bit. First exercise to do is to reread your entire story from front to end, not as a writer. This is a mindset thing. This is a mindset thing, because what you have to do is you have to read it as a reader. Mm-hmm. You have to like get yourself, don't read it where you normally write. Put it in a on your phone or print it out and go to the backyard or go to the kitchen or go somewhere where you don't normally write. Read it as a reader. Look for the emotional satisfaction of what you're reading, the character arcs, like, are you enjoying the story? What you're going to find a lot of times is that you've dropped something along the way. Yeah. Sometimes it's like two chapters earlier, like a good rule of thumb is just go back two chapters. And yeah, as Wendy and I both know, and Cheryl as well, you might end up throwing out the two chapters that came after mm-hmm. that got them in the well, because they were never supposed to be in the well. And they'd be like, Trudy's like, other times, and this is when I talk about in my story, you may realize you just broke all the rules. Like, I killed the antagonist of the story, the bad guy, the villain. And this was like a Cape Fear type of story. This was a stalkerly thriller story. And I had the guy killed off like two thirds of the way through the love romance arc of the main characters. So all the tension just fell apart because, well, now the bad guy's dead. And yeah. I was sitting there and I'm like, no, like these don't line up at all. Like, no, like I was like, I joke about it. It's like, now what? Right. Can I just put the bad guy like on a cruise for 2 weeks so I can do the romance arc and finish that and then have him come back? But I realized reading it as a reader that I had broken that promise to the reader that this villain was going to be an important part of the story and get his real comeuppance in a dramatic climactic scene at the end of the book, just kind of sort of passive aggressively killed him off. And I was like, no, that's not what that needs to happen. So you're going to have to go backwards to go forwards. And that is the real trick when you're discovery writing, is oftentimes you will forget to take that left turn in Albuquerque, and then you'll have to backtrack. Don't be afraid of it, I think, is the important thing. A lot of people get into those corners, get in the bottom of that well, and just like, can't solve it. It's everything that's written is there. I'm not going to delete anything. I see you, Trudy. I'm not going to delete it. I
would find a secret button you press, and there's a secret exit to the well and a tunnel that was put in there by someone.
Monks.
The monks that see the well in.
And there you go. You're a discovery writer. Congratulations, Trudy. You did.
No, she's not. Trust me.
I am in some ways. I don't plan everything, but Wendy just thinks I do because I plan more than her, which is like a little bit. She plans nothing. She
plans more than me in life. Let's face it.
But it is true that you have to be willing to go back and make some of those sacrifices if you find yourself in that situation. Now, sometimes you'll find yourself in that situation, and just like what Trudy, you'll be like, you know what? The well is part of an old monastery ruins. I bet there's a secret button to the tunnels that the old hermit on the hill told us about. And so they fiddle around and they find this, you know, you don't know. Sometimes when you go back and you do what I call a reader read through, you'll see some of these little Chekhov's guns or these little things that your subconscious put in there. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I can use that. I can get them out of the tunnel using that.
Yeah.
Just don't know. If you have to back up to know where you're going to go.
Quite often, if I have a scene like that and it's just not working, I'll just change the point of view too. Like, I'll just go from one character to another. And quite often that will change everything.
And it looks like doing the read aloud, which is, you know, is a funny Timmy voice, but actually it does put the, you know, some of the inflection in there to know that your story just doesn't sound right anyway, even if you think it's on the right track, it just doesn't sound right.
It's read aloud or text to speech reading, which is available in Scrivener. It's available on all the apps. I mean, it's just real common these days. When I did work at university, I worked in disability services, and like back in 2012, that was such expensive software. It wasn't something you could ask authors to do. Have your computer read it aloud to you. But these days it's so simple. It's a great way to look for problems, not just grammar and sentence structure, but like you said, like looking for plot holes, looking for things that just don't ring right when you hear it. That's a fantastic tool. I recommend it to everybody.
I always use that for my last draw, always.
Good idea. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And then read it. I think the thing is too, with scenes is working out quite often it's who's the most in character that's got the most invested in a scene quite often. It needs to be the one talking. And that's what I've found quite often I'll get wrong. And then I'll go back and go, wrong character. Switch that round.
That's good. That's good. I'm going to have to remember that because just switch the character point of view.
It does. It quite often works. It just changes the tension, you know. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think that being a writer this way, it gives you license to switch things around, to change things up, whereas you think, I have to do him, her, and the, you know, if it's a romance, it doesn't actually have to be like that.
No,
it's not set in concrete, you know, it's just do what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially these days. Yeah.
Yeah, anything goes, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to have an editor that understands you. I think that's important.
So important. So important. Yeah, that's critical.
Instead of trying to change you, work with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got one more question on discovery writing, and then I want to talk about project management for authors quickly before we disappear. So it's just what's your favorite part of discovery writing? Like why? I mean, I know you said why you choose it, but like what's good about it? Why should we be going out?
It's like your own adventure story. Like it's like going into a movie and like you kind of know what's like if you go watch a Star Trek movie, like you know who's going to be there, you know what kind of sort of what's going to happen, and yet still that's their sense of adventure. It's like Star Trek and the Enterprise, and they're going through space, and there's going to be a bad guy, and there's going to be space battles. And for me, that's the whole feeling that I have when I especially when I start a story, but when I lose that feeling, that's usually when I know I've lost the thread. Mm-hmm. But that's the fun part for me. It's a little, I don't know, like a dopamine hit, I guess you could say. It's just I'm going to find out what happens next, and I'm really excited about that. Mm-hmm. That just makes it very interesting for me.
Yeah, that's a really good point, I think, because you know, for me, just getting the title of a book, but especially beginning a new book. I think you have to have that sense of excitement and wonder because even if you don't know exactly what you're writing, you can see the opportunity, the possibility of what the book can be. And I think, I like to bring that into starting every book, but also starting the workday, you know, because maybe you haven't thought about where the book is going, but, you know, there's so many different ways you can go, isn't there?
Mm. Mm-hmm. I love that.
I love that.
Getting excited about the possibilities. That's what we do as authors. Awesome. Yeah. See, this
all
is
all in our own ways. Thank you.
Freaking genius. So let's talk about project management now that we've talked about the possibilities. So you gave us the five buckets, but how do we use project management as authors? How can we use project management to kind of be more productive or to help us write? I don't know, write more. Is that the idea?
Yeah, write more, or I would say more productively, because more productive may not be more. Like it really depends on what your personal goals are. So funnily enough, I've also written a book about this. It's not necessarily for writers. It's called Rise to the Task. It's for my personal projects management system. But it applies to all sorts of projects. And this was one of the things that I really wanted to help people understand, because when they get into productivity, task management, word counts, people tend to get very wrapped up in the minutia. How many words did I write today? How many scenes did I write today? You know, how many, you know, marketing posts did I do today? And they kind of forget that this is all part of a bigger project. And so when you have a project and you're starting out, it's, let's just say, rather than do something very high level like your business or some your marketing as a project, but just a book is a project, right? So there's the ideation stage, there's the planning stage, there's the, you know, actual action stage, there's the wrap up. When you're looking at these things as stages and you're looking at them as discrete components of a full project, It's less, I have to sit down and write this book and write 40,000-50,000 words in 6 weeks or 100,000 words in 3 months or whatever your goal is. You're looking at the entire project. You're looking at, what am I creating? What kind of time frame am I looking at? What are the elements of it? So for instance, you'll know that you want to write 100,000 words in 3 months, but you also know that somebody's going to have to design the cover, and somebody's going to have to do the formatting, and somebody's going to have to do the marketing. And that somebody may all be you, mm-hmm. or it may be your team. If you have people that you have do your covers, do your formatting, do things like that. And so you start seeing the bigger picture of how it all fits together, and you can start planning more holistically rather than just throwing things on your calendar and trying to hit a word count goal. Because mm-hmm. that's what I see happening, is people get very down in the weeds with word count goals or launch dates and things. So they get close to the launch date and then they're suddenly like, oh no, I forgot about the cover. Or, oh no, the cover that I got isn't the one that I want now. And you're like, well, if you had all of this project management, if you had it laid out in these buckets, you'd be able to see at what point in the stage you need to be working on these different elements of it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very structured way of looking at time, but it is less reliant on dates in the calendar or date. Like one of the things that I really try to get people to focus on is, instead of putting something as a due date on your calendar, put it as a step in the project, because then you're going to see where the next project comes. Now, you may have a due date for the final project, but look at where that thing needs to fall in the process of creating the project. So I hope that wasn't too esoteric or confusing.
That's great.
Right. Really.
Sorry, so
how does it, in terms of, okay, I've got loads of more questions, don't believe.
Okay, go on. Done. go for it.
So because when you were talking about, the ideation is, you know, thinking up the ideas, right. But the planning one, I was thinking, oh, well, you guys are going to have no planning because you just want to get in and write. But actually you're talking that the planning stage is more about getting the covers, organizing the edits, doing all the things around the creation of the book or what will be the final publishing.
As kind of a metaphor, like if we're talking project management for architecture or for construction, right? The planning stage is getting the budget together, getting the blueprints together, lining up the electrician and the plumber and the concrete guy, and knowing that you have to line up the plumber before the concrete guy and the electrician last. Mm-hmm. And so these are the types of things that you'll put on the agenda. For a writer, you'll know that you do need to get the writing done. But also, before you finish the writing, you need to line up the cover art, because by that point, you'll know what needs to be on the cover, and you can hire a cover artist if you're indie. And then last, you're going to be looking at formatting on that particular process. And then you're going to be looking at marketing. So instead of just saying, oh, there's this big ball of stuff I have to do, you're looking at all the different things you need to do and what order they need to be done.
Mm-hmm. And then the process of writing would run smoother if you're a little bit organized.
Exactly. Yeah. You just got these little buckets.
Yeah. If there's too much in your head, sometimes you just go, you know.
And that is what I deal with. That's what I deal with most of my clients on productivity and project management coaching for authors, is untangling that ball. Because especially if you're an indie author, it's so much, it's so overwhelming. If they haven't done it 50 times already, like many of us with a lot of experience have, they're coming into this, their first book, their third book, they're just overwhelmed. And they're like, I have to do the cover and I have to get it. And then how do I line up reviews and how do I get ARC readers? And it's just like, whoa. There's a plan. There's a project. Let's put this all into the steps and figure out how things go. Let's make a little checklist. I am a big proponent of checklists. I love checklists. You make a checklist and then you check the thing off. And it just feels like you're making progress because you have a better grasp of all the elements and you aren't feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, Shah's going to love you.
Yes. He was so sorry she couldn't be here today.
Yeah, but, she loves a good checklist, right?
Oh, yeah. I love a good checklist.
Yeah.
And that's there's something about the checklist that's kind of calming, in that you know it's on the checklist. You know that it's not, you're not going to forget about it, and it doesn't need to be done right this second. So you can always, like, it's something that's going to be done. It's in the system. It's in progress. And you can right now focus on presumably the writing that needs to get done or whatever, you know.
And get the gratification of ticking it off.
There have actually, so as a project manager, somebody who's in project, there have been studies done that show if you have a checklist at the start of a project and you use the checklist, it reduces accidents, it decreases delays. In other words, it prevents delays from happening, and it also improves accuracy. And this is true whether you're talking about heart surgery. This is true whether you're talking about teaching kindergartners. If you have a checklist and you go through the checklist, you're going to be more productive, you're going to be more efficient, and you're going to be much more calm about it.
I was going to say less stressed.
Less stressed, exactly. Because you know that if you're hitting the checklist, you're not going to be overlooking something, which I think is what a lot of people get wrapped up in. Like, what am I forgetting?
What am I missing? And,
Which is my 100%. Life, really.
Well, it's there's amazing. A reason why I like it. It's like,
I've got someone who organizes me. That's why.
But you are the unicorn, Wendy, because it doesn't matter how fluffy and out of whack you go, you are so productive. You get that stuff done no matter what.
That's the one thing in my life that I can control.
That's all about determination and willpower,
Competitiveness.
Competitiveness. I compete
with myself.
Is there anything else in regards to product management project management that is useful that we could that you can talk about? I don't know what I don't know here, so lead us through.
Well, I think we've hit some of the main points is understanding the five stages. I think a lot of times if you just sit down and think, okay, where does this fall in the five stages of what I'm trying to do? I mean, I have people who try to do after action analysis before they've even finished. They're like, well, this wasn't working. I'm like, can we just finish first? And then let's review what we did. So you know the five stages. A checklist, that would have been one that I would have brought up at that question if we hadn't even already discussed it, just because if you've got a checklist, it's so much easier. A couple of projects that I've done, like I have a little handout that I give out, a freebie, that's a podcast checklist for people who are starting podcasts, right? And so a lot of times people who are starting podcasts, they don't know what they don't know. And so this checklist just says, here's all the things you're going to have to know. Here's a checklist for every episode. Every episode's going to go through this. And maybe you'll skip some things because it doesn't apply to your particular, like, are you going to have downloadables or handouts on your podcast? Yes, no. Okay, you can take it off the checklist. But having that kind of checklist, you can do a checklist for writing a book. You can do a checklist for your marketing plan. You can do a checklist for every book, for every marketing plan for every book. You can just break these things down into simple organizational steps. If you're feeling overwhelmed, step back, whether it's overwhelmed by the book itself, whether it's overwhelmed by the marketing that you're having to do, whether it's you're overwhelmed by the whole process, step back, think of the five steps, put things into buckets, just try to figure it out and break it down so that you can just see how it all fits together rather than just throwing your hands up and going, I don't know what to do next. So that's kind of my very straightforward advice. It's just the basics.
I think that's 100% awesome way to finish that up.
Yeah. I do that. If I don't write it down in my diary, often it doesn't get done. So it's almost like I can guarantee I'm going to get it done by writing it down in the diary. And often it's the things that I haven't written down that I forget about.
I'm a big believer in writing things down. It's just how my brain works. And people are like, you don't use one of those fancy project management apps? And I'm like, no, that's not how my brain works. I like writing things down so that I can track them and see where they are. I do use database, like Notion database, for collecting information. And like my entire marketing plan is run out of a database, but like my daily and weekly to-do lists are all written down. That's just, the crossing the out part, I just love crossing off the just feels so good when I can cross something off. So. I feel that but if anybody is interested, yeah, my book, Rise to the Task, which is not specifically for writers, but it is about project management. It has worksheets and all sorts of stuff in there. So somebody can go take a look at that and maybe it'll help them get them straighten out their life a little bit.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for that.
It was so good.
Yeah, so we're good. Kind of rolling into the end of the interview here now. So I probably think that the next thing to ask is, where's the best place to find you if someone wants to look for you anywhere else in the world and get your books?
Cool website.
Yeah, at the website that Wendy loves.
It is my website, and it's got everything. It's houseofyork.info. So that's houseofyork, all one word, .info. Nice. You'll find links to all my books. You'll find links to writers' resources. I also run a writing community on Discord for writers that's focused on productivity and productivity and accountability. I do a lot of co-writing sessions there. We do a lot of sprints there. People can talk about what's working for them productivity wise and what isn't. There's links to that. That's all there. And also all my social media. I have a link on that page called Everything Everywhere All at Once. And that links to all everything everywhere, including my shops and my own podcasts and social media. Yeah. I think I covered it. That's it. It's all at that website. You'll find it.
Houseofyork.info.
You'll find it.
Yeah.
I am, y'all. It's like some days but I love it. See, that's just it. I love podcasts. I love talking to other writers. I love writing the books that I write. I love the stories I want to. I just love it. Y'all, it's so much fun to be a writer. It really
that's
is.
Awesome. Yeah. Yes. Yes, yeah. It is. Thank you so much for joining us. We've had such a good time chatting to you here today. It's been awesome.
Been great.
I've got lots of notes on project management. Not so much on the discovery writing, but you know.
She's like, you can have that. Yeah, you can have that. Well, you know, feel free to email me, reach out to me anytime. I'm happy to talk to people, talk to you guys, talk to anyone about what might help them.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. That's fantastic. And Cheryl, where can we be found if someone was?
We can be found at spargirlspodcast.com on all social media, also on YouTube. And also on Patreon. So if you'd like to buy us a coffee or come and join our superstars group, we would love to have you. And come and check us out, come and talk to us, and come and watch the video.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us for another episode of the Spar Girls podcast. We'll be back again next week with another guest or another episode. But for now, farewell.
Bye. Bye. Bye.